I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver, British Columbia at thecommentary.ca. Whit Fraser joins me again. The journalist, broadcaster, and author has a new memoir out this week, From Ragged Ass Road to Redo Hall. The subtitle says it all, Stories of Canada. In the book, he recounts stories of connecting with Canadians he encountered as a journalist, as well as showcases memorable Canadians that he's met more recently as the 56th Vice Regal Consort, as his wife Mary Simon has been Governor General since 2021. We forget that in a previous career, he was a reporter on Parliament Hill, covering politics and stories about our North in the 1970s and 1980s. He was one of the first anchors on CBC News World, now CBC News Network. He's made friends high and low, and it's these gifts of connection and communication that makes this book highly readable. He calls out various media outlets in this country for the kind of reporting on Redo Hall that's unlike the sort of journalism he's practiced. He also takes us into the rooms where various office holders and or heads of state gather, like the speech from the throne in 2025 that wasn't delivered by his wife, but rather King Charles III. It's a delightful story he tells from his front row seat. Whit Fraser was founding chair of the Canadian Polar Commission and executive director of Inuit Taparit Kanatami. He is the author of True North Rising and the novel Cold Edge of Heaven. This new book is published by Douglas and McIntyre. We spoke last Thursday with Mr. Fraser joining me from Redo Hall in Ottawa. Please welcome back to the Plant Online program, Whit Fraser. Your Excellency, good morning.
Let's start with good morning, Whit, Joe.
Good morning, Whit. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you very much.
I was just telling you before we started how much I enjoyed your book. Your previous book, we talked about a couple of years ago now. I remember asking you about your gift for storytelling, and you cited your mother as the influence. In the book, because there's so many wonderful stories in the book, the thing that I got out of it was not just your gift of storytelling, which is throughout the book, obviously, but the fact that you're enjoying telling these stories. Is that an accurate sort of assumption that I have on my part as a reader, say?
I do enjoy it. Nobody's put it to me that way before, but of course I enjoy it. I think that's part of being a reporter, is to enjoy telling the story, finding it, setting it out. And the older I get, I think the more I may enjoy it.
The other thing that I guess age provides us is that it gives us a great perspective on life and in your case, the country and your own life. They seem to run parallel to one another and intertwine at various points. The book really is about connection, isn't it? Because that's something that you've managed to do throughout whether it's in your working life and especially now. Because, I mean, there's great stories in the book about how you connected with people, say, 50, 40 years ago. And then in recent years, because of your wife's job, you've managed to meet, say, the daughter of the pilot from Cincinnati, or the child of the artist whose carving you treasure. That must be a great thing to say, renew every few years, these connections.
It's an incredible feeling. You know, we're all in this great big orbit, and then all of our individual orbits so many times connect again and again and again. And very often, with people that you can pick it up 30 years or 40 years later, exactly where you left off. And then people keep coming in and out of stories. So I think that's, you know, I also start early in the book somewhere and I say, this book is really about a guy who's incredibly lucky, had good timing, could benefit from some far-flung reporting assignments in every part of the country, and on top of all that, married well.
Yeah.
But that's it in a nutshell. And each is a part of the other, and it would have been a far different book had there not been Rideau Hall. But and I chose the title and I structured it because it is a unique journey, and I'm trying not to say that in a boastful way. I'm ever grateful for it, but that's the way it turned out, and it is a unique story. Yeah. And I learned so much more about the country just from being here, and then all of the people we met, not only coming through these doors, but with Mary's visits to different parts of the country. And you know, I'll give you one an example only recently that came after the book. I had a very good friend in Fort McPherson in the 1970s. He was a very wise chief named Johnny Charlie in Fort McPherson. And Johnny Charlie and I really got along well and enjoyed each other. He enjoyed baseball, too, or basketball. And at the Arctic Winter Games only months ago in Whitehorse, a lady came up to me and she said, "I'm Johnny Charlie's daughter." And the tears came to my eyes, too. And I said, "Come here." And I'm holding on and hugging her.
Yeah.
Because it's like I'm now again hugging this dear old friend. And that's a great gift when that happens.
Yeah, it is, it is. And it seems, you know, and not just because of the recent years, but, I mean, through your years of reporting, you have seen so much of the country. Is there a part of the country where you wouldn't feel at home?
I didn't find it yet.
Yeah.
Some are easier than others. But no, there's not a part of the country that I wouldn't feel at home. But the further I am, to be honest, the further I am from the center of a big city, the more comfortable I become. And I think that's part of the good fortune I had in life, is that my best stories, my very best stories, came from the bush and barrens and not from officialdom or the center of cities or from Parliament Hill, for that matter.
So the North obviously is a special part in your heart. It's a part of the country that a lot of us in Canada don't think about. We really shouldn't overlook, I guess, the importance, both geographically and politically, of the North.
But except let somebody mess with the North.
Mm.
And I wrote about that in a chapter called "The Polar Sea: On Guard for Thee or Not." That was 1985 when the Americans sent their giant icebreaker, bullied its way through the Northwest Passage, and Canada insisted that those are Canadian waters, and the Americans said, no, they're international waters. And come hell or high water, they were going through the Northwest Passage, and they did. I got sent to pick the ship up and managed to find it parked in Resolute Bay only 48 hours after it left Greenland.
Mm-hmm.
It was waiting for two observers to get on board and to give us the opportunity to borrow a helicopter and get the first pictures of it and then begin tracking it through the ends through the Northwest Passage. The managing editor told me in the weeks ahead that the ratings for that week were the highest ratings that the National had ever recorded.
Mm.
He was also quick to add, and Whit, it wasn't because of you. But it was because people were messing with our North.
Mm-hmm.
And there was and the backlash the government got because it was not able to make a stronger statement on sovereignty and on even forcing the Americans to ask permission. It was a huge political problem for the Mulroney government editorial pages across the country were just roaring with national patriotic support and outrage. But this icebreaker was going through the Northwest Passage, and there wasn't much we could do about it.
Yeah. Well, was it exciting looking back at and not just stories like that, but other stories you covered over your career for the book?
It still is.
Yeah.
Yeah, it still is, and in that story and in that chapter, a man named Mel Hertig, he was a publisher in Edmonton. He wore the maple leaf on his heart, maple leaf on both sleeves all of the time. He had an organization called the Council of Canadians. He got some money together, and he promised Canadians, one figuratively punch in the nose for the Americans, put four young people on the Twin Otter, along with ourselves and our crew and a couple of other photographers, and we met it in Prince Wales Strait just before it left Canadian waters off Banks Island, and we flew across the deck, and the two Inuit, Roger Grubin and Eddie Dillon from Tuktoyaktuk and Inuvik, dropped the Canadian flag on the squarely on the deck of the Polar Sea with a note from Mal Hertig and the Council of Canadians. This is not the way an ally treats its neighbor. These are Canadian waters. Inside the airplane, we all cheered. There was no solemn objectivity or non-participation. We all cheered. You had to. And that was the only piece of satisfaction Canada got in the whole thing for that moment. And so, sure, it was exciting. It's still exciting. Thank God nobody got hurt, but it's still exciting.
Now, you've had many exciting moments. You've managed to see the country, you know, in recent years, in moments of great celebration, but also great sadness, you know, because of your wife's job, you know, you're often dispatched to areas of tragedy. You know, I think of Tumbler Ridge, you know, in recent months. Has these last 4.5 years? I guess your idea of Canada, that's only, I guess your love and admiration for it has only strengthened, hasn't it?
It has. And of course it has. Because it strengthened, but it also became more into focus. I write too about Orders of Canada. Yes, the very special ceremony that happens here a few times a year is the country honors its citizens. And the achievements of people who come and receive an Order of Canada in every possible aspect, including people like arguably one of Hollywood's most successful and gifted directors, James Cameron. He was moved clearly and visibly by receiving his Order of Canada. And so were hundreds and hundreds of others that I witnessed. And tears are not uncommon. Mm-hmm. And of all of the accomplishment and all of the stages that many people may have been on in their lives, and suddenly when the Governor General of Canada, and I'm not just talking about Mary, I'm talking about a Governor General, puts the honor on the citizen, it's a very special moment.
You write in the book, Whit, about the expectation when she took on the job of having to, say, bite your tongue. Have there been many moments of that over the last 4.5 years for you?
Probably fewer than I thought. But of course there has been. Long after this is over, I'll still have to bite my tongue. Sometimes a good rant is appropriate, and sometimes it's better to bite your tongue, and I hope I find the balance, but that doesn't mean I'll always be silenced.
Yeah. Well, there is a chapter in the book where you talk about press coverage in recent years having to do with the Office of the Governor General. And you contend, and you cite, you know, three publications, the National Post, the Western Standard, and Blacklock's Reporter, as practicing a sort of journalism that's very different than the one that you were accustomed to in the many years you were in the profession, that their reporting was not ethical or honest. I just want to take one example that you cite in the book about, say, the National Post reporting about dry cleaning at Rideau Hall. They reported that it was about $20,000 over 3 years. That certainly wasn't yours and Mary's laundry, was it?
No, now we're airing dirty laundry, aren't we? No, that was the dry cleaning bill for Rideau Hall, which included drapes and uniforms for the ceremonial guards and tour guides. All of it, and somewhere in the middle of it, and that was all explained, and somewhere in the middle was the Governor General's dry cleaning for occasions, not for our daily clothes, but for formal clothes.
Yeah.
And sometimes she may change clothes several times a day for various events. But that was explained, but rather than break it down, the newspapers or papers just went with the Governor General spends, you had the figure there, $20,000 on dry cleaning in 3 years. That wouldn't have been allowed, in my view, years ago. But the larger question that I'll try and move out of my rant and my personal frustration and pose the question also is that who in Canada believes that we have a healthy media from every aspect, whether it's the new media and the social media, but the media in general, and I do try and address some of that, is in serious, serious question all across the country. And I hope that we move soon more and more into a national discussion of what is the future of the media in Canada. Newspapers are still closing far too quickly, cutting down news staff. Everybody recognizes it.
Yeah.
Nobody yet has got an answer. I don't think any single person does. But I do think that we should be having more and more discussions about where are we going with media in general in the country.
Have you found, though, the level of scrutiny that you and your wife have had, say, you had to consider that there was going to be some scrutiny, especially, you know, considering previous office holders and the sort. Has it at all been unfair over the last 4.5 years?
What's been unfair are the kind of things that I've pointed out. But if you want to go on balance, that's a small percentage.
Mm.
By and large, the more established and recognized established media like CTV, the Globe and Mail, magazine coverage has been fair, quite fair, with very little complaint. But it's the contrast between some of the stuff that you mentioned, and then how that spills into social media, and then comes out the end in the very hateful and sometimes even racist comments that you can find in the comments section of newspapers. And it's all part of the need for a discussion as to what is the media and how should it be, how can it serve us properly.
Now, you were at the beginning of CBC News World back in 1989, I'm wondering, you know, nearly 40 years later, when you look back at it, is it the way that you all could have imagined it would have turned out, say, in 1989?
Well, let me be careful. No, it's not. But this is not a criticism. What I'm going to say is not a criticism at all. It's not. The present management and over the years, but the managers have had to work with what they had in terms of financial resources and increasing demands on for service with internet and the web broadcasting.
Mm-hmm.
Our vision, the vision of the founder of News World, the late Joan Donaldson. Joan wanted to see us doing far more live broadcasts, very agile, and begin to cover inquiries as they unfolded and issues as they unfolded, and we did a lot of that, and it was really a flying by the RC or pants broadcasting for sure, but we thrived on the adrenaline that it produced. There's much less of that now than there was then, but I don't work there, and I don't. The resources that we had may be far different from what people will have today.
Mm-hmm.
So it's evolved, and if it's evolved
in Vancouver,
in the right or wrong direction,
I'm Joseph Plato.
Leave others to say that.
Well, I'll just say my observation here in Vancouver. You watch the National at 6 p.m., and then it seems like it's the same broadcast until the morning, you know. So, you know, that's for somebody else to solve, I guess. You bring up a good point in the book about how when your wife Mary was appointed Governor General, people would come up to you and say that she's the right person at the right time. And then you ask yourself, would people have said that 10 years earlier? And that brought up a good point as I was reading the book and thinking of how, if you've noticed that we've evolved in terms of our views as Canadians and seeing somebody like Mary as Governor General, that might not have happened in years past, right?
Absolutely. And Justin Trudeau was Prime Minister. He was a very controversial Prime Minister, but he said, his words, not mine, that there was a higher ideal and it was time that Canada had its first Indigenous Governor General. And his choice was Mary. Biased as I am, he was right on both accounts, of course. But that higher ideal, that after this long in Confederation, and the history of the relationship between Indigenous peoples and the rest of the country, yes, it was time for an Indigenous Governor General. There are other people that could have also been Governor General. He chose Mary, but he was right in that part that was the time. Reconciliation was critical. The Truth and Reconciliation Commission had reported only years earlier.
Mm-hmm.
We were on that path, and coming down the path, now the graves of the unmarked graves of school children are emerging, and she has had in her past and continues to do, one of her strengths was that as a bridge builder. And so she had said many times to staff here, remember, I am not the Governor General of Indigenous people. I'm an Indigenous Governor General for all Canada. And I know that she's worked very hard to maintain that.
Yeah. You describe in the book that scene nearly a year ago when King Charles delivered the speech from the throne. Now, that's a task that your wife would usually do. So what was it like for the both of you to sit there and be in that room? I mean, you describe how special it was. As an old reporter, I mean, it must have been, you might have wanted to document the whole thing.
In a way, I did, but I did document it in my head and my heart, and I didn't have to file that night.
Mm-hmm.
It was beautiful, and it was beautiful to have the front row seat, but it was also beautiful to know that this was the right time for the king to come and sit at the throne of Canada and do that speech from the throne. And in the simple line at the end, when he just said the words out of the national anthem,
yeah,
we are the true North, strong and free, and the applause and the emotion in the room, the patriotism, it was the right time to have the king do that. And for anybody to witness it was marvelous.
You know, I was making a list as I was reading the book about all the important people that you've met over the last few years, even before this job. You know, you've met heads of state, you've met heads of government, kings and queens. The small talk in private moments like that is what I was curious about. I mean, you must have this list of topics that you can bring up at any moment, you know, especially when there's a lull or something like that in a room or something, or at a dinner even.
Well, everybody will have their own way of doing things, but in Canada, sports is important.
Mm.
That can often be a hook. Where people may have lived in their past may be a hook, but I'll give you one example. And we met a member of one of the royal families in Saudi Arabia, I believe it was.
Mm-hmm.
And we were in the beautiful surroundings, having just got off the airplane. And he mentioned that he had studied medicine at McGill. Now we have common ground.
Mm.
Montreal, McGill. And by the way, he said, as a young medical student, I used to go and do medical visits and clinics in Kujawak, Mary's hometown in northern Quebec.
Wow.
We're in pretty good ice right there.
You know? Yeah.
So you don't know, you never know where it's coming from. And each one will be looking, and there'll be all kinds of briefing material, of course, that you can get back to. But very often each one is feeling the same, looking for a common ground. So in this case, it was he that said, I studied in Montreal, and I went to Kuchewak. Very likely that he could have looked after a cold or an ailment from one of her parents.
Wow,
So But it's all human relationship. It's just getting to know one another, you know. And that's really all it is. It's getting to know one another and being comfortable.
Yeah, as I said earlier, that's...
And of course, of course, people have many, many questions who come from different parts of the country. Most of their questions and curiosity very soon get connected directly or indirectly to our questions about the North.
That's the thing. The book really is about connection, isn't it? And it's something that you've managed to do, not just in recent years, obviously, but in previous years. I can't tell you how much I enjoyed reading the book and talking to you again.
Well, thank you, Joe.
All the best, and we'll hopefully see you down the road.
All right. Thank you again. Always good to talk to you.
The book is called From Ragged Ass Road to Read Your Hole, Stories of Canada. It's published by Douglas and McIntyre. It's author Whit Fraser. Join me on the line from Ottawa in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plante.